Hello, and thank you for listening to Call the Roll, a public affairs program produced by the Columbus City Council and aired here on Freedom FM. I'm your host, John Ivan, Communications Director for the Columbus City Council. On this week's show, a new crime lab for Columbus Safety Forces and Donate Life Month in Ohio. We begin with Columbus City Council member Zach Klein, the chair of the Public Safety Committee, joining fellow council members and community leaders for the opening of the new Division of Police Forensic Services Center. The new crime lab, located next to the property room on Woodrow Avenue, gives police the space and equipment they need to protect residents and property. Here's Councilmember Klein.
The mayor recognized Michelle Mills, President Pro Tem Michelle Mills, who is a great advocate for public safety, and I was fortunate enough to take over her chair as the Safety Committee Chairman. I also like to recognize Councilmember Tyson in the back, Priscilla Tyson, and Councilmember Jiza Page. Why don't you all come up here? Yeah, come on up. Jiza is the newest member of council, but it's come from the prosecutor's office, the city attorney's office, and has seen firsthand, going out into the neighborhoods and fighting to keep our streets safe. Jiza Page has done that, and coming from Rick Pfeiffer's office has been leading the fight to clean up our neighborhoods and deserves a lot of credit for that. I'll be very brief in my remarks about the crime lab, because a state-of-the-art crime lab restores confidence in our criminal justice system. It gives police tools that they need to solve crimes and to hold criminals accountable for the actions that they've done. And I see a lot of civic leaders from the South Side. If you could raise your hands, I know there's several of them here, South Side leaders. There's Curtis. Okay, there's a bunch of them. Like, these folks are out every day, frustrated with crime in their neighborhood. And they let us know about it, and that's our job for them to let us know about it. And we're able to work with Kim Jacobs and Director Speaks to help make their quality of life better, to improve the quality of life they have. And we cannot do it without a state-of-the-art crime lab. We need to hold people accountable for their actions. And thank you for the employees of the crime lab that make that happen, that can hold people accountable for the criminal actions that they do. So thank you so much.
The $14.6 million facility features the newest technology, including safety and security features. The lab processes DNA samples, ballistics comparison, controlled substance identification, and other forensic evidence collected by police officers at a crime scene. These processes will now be completed in a lab that is more than 35,000 square feet compared to the previous location on King Avenue that was 6,000 square feet. As the city's population has increased over the years, so has the amount of evidence that needs to be processed, hence the need for more space to conduct business. Here's Mayor Mike Coleman.
And thank all those terrific employees that make us the best crime lab in the country. Your work is substantial and important, and your work also makes our city safer as a result. And so with this crime lab, from 6,000 square feet to now 35,000, over 35,000 square feet, a total of $14 million. That's why it took so long to build, because it cost so much to build. $14 million and with grants and city money and all that, and we are so proud of this, and so proud of this, because by doing this, we make our city safer and our residents safer all over the city. And we talked about it and tried to figure out how to do this, and it was not an easy thing to do because of the cost. It's substantial. But the needs were even greater. Because of all the work that was being done by this wonderful group of people and this great lady here. And Mitch Brown started this back in the day. So that tells you how long we've been around. And Mitch, I'm here again to say thank you for this initiative. You took it and molded it in the early stages, and then your successor finished it out. And so I'm proud of both of you for what you've done. So 14,000 requests a year. That's amazing. Help solve crimes, help make our neighborhood safer. Drug identification, important to know. Firearms testing, what is it, some 100, over 100 weapons a week? Over 100 weapons a week come through here that need to be tested, analyzed, and protected. And they put it in the property room right next door. Forensic biology, DNA analysis, critical to modern crime fighting. DNA analysis. It gets criminals behind bars faster, and you get the right person behind bars easier. Latent print processing, document examination, evidence handling, all takes place here. So this makes our police work better, easier, more efficient, and more productive, and our neighborhoods safer.
Now here's Police Chief Kim Jacobs.
It's new equipment, extra equipment that will allow us to process evidence much faster and in a very diligent way so that we don't have backlogs and so that we have the ability to hire new scientists that are very important to getting that process done. So I appreciate you putting up with 6,000 square feet and 15 years of waiting, but it's well worth it. The vision that Director Brown and the mayor and council had is that we will have state-of-the-art. And state-of-the-art is what the citizens of Columbus deserve. And as a person that used to patrol in this area, not frequently but infrequently, look at this street. If you will look at the beautification project that has happened on this street as well, you can drive down Woodrow Avenue now and see a state-of-the-art facility that the police officers frequent and that has brought a lot of new attention to this area of town. And we truly appreciate what we have brought to this neighborhood. Our redeveloped apartments down here as well have brought attention to this area that well deserves our good work here. So we promise to do that good work. Building trust, as has been mentioned, is extremely important to us, and doing good work in the crime lab and the Forensic Sciences Center, along with the property control area that we have here, all state-of-the-art, will allow us to provide excellent service that you can trust will be done in the right way. We truly appreciate your patience and your attention to providing this facility to us. We know that it doesn't come, it comes with the permission of our people, but it comes from our taxpayers in the city of Columbus, and we truly appreciate your offering us this opportunity to grow and to be state-of-the-art.
April is Donate Life Month in Columbus. Ohio has approximately 3,200 people waiting for an organ donation. A single organ donor can potentially save the lives of 8 people through an organ donation of their heart, lungs, liver, pancreas, kidneys, and small intestine. With more on the importance of organ donation is Kent Holloway, the CEO of Lifeline of Ohio, and a local woman who wants to provide hope for families awaiting donation, despite her personal pain.
On behalf of my colleagues and the nearly 670 local individuals waiting for a life-saving organ transplant, I want to say thank you for your support of organ, eye, and tissue donation. As a member of the Donate Life Ohio organization, we work in tandem with our colleagues statewide to bring attention to the need for more registered donors. We rely on key partnerships across the state to help us connect with our community. And one of those I want to tell you about now. So in 2011, the husband of Rhonda Major Mack, an employee at the Ohio Hospital Association, was waiting for a kidney transplant. He had been waiting for a long time. And as his health deteriorated, her co-workers began to ask what could they do to help. The Ohio Hospital Association invited us into its office to present on donation. Rhonda was going to share her family's journey as part of our presentation, but when we arrived at the Ohio Hospital Association offices that day, we were told that Rhonda had rushed her husband to the hospital just during the night before. So at the young age of 39, Rob died a short time later, waiting for a transplant that didn't come in time. The mission to save lives through donation was now personal at the Ohio Hospital Association. A committee of key employees, including Rhonda, gathered with members of Donate Life Ohio and the Ohio Department of Health Second Chance Trust Fund to plan what would become the Hospital Champions Program. Launched in 2012, the web-based program challenged hospitals across Ohio to take the life-saving message of donation to their communities. When the program ended in May 2014, it had engaged more than a third of all Ohio hospitals and transplant centers. logging more than 2,000 events and activities in support of donor registration in their communities. So in honor of her husband, Rob Mack, Lifeline of Ohio would like to thank the City of Columbus for encouraging every citizen to register their donation decision in the Ohio Donor Registry. And I'd like to now introduce Rhonda, a Donate Life ambassador to our organization, to you all today.
Council President Ginther, Council Member Tyson, and members of council, my name is Rhonda Major Mack. My husband Rob and I married in 1996, soon after we signed up for life insurance, which meant we had to undergo physicals. During Rob's physical, the nurse told us that his blood sugar was dangerously high, and she sent us directly to the hospital, where we learned he was diabetic. Rob did everything he had to do to stay healthy. He lost weight, changed his diet, and took medications. We were grateful to know that this disease could be managed and he could live a normal life. In October 2000, our daughter Maya was born, and we both enjoyed parenthood. Rob was a wonderful father and truly treasured spending time with Maya. He was very active in attending her recitals, soccer games, and making his presence known in her life. Who knew it would be for such a short time? When Maya was five, Rob's kidneys failed, and he was tethered to a dialysis machine. After 2 years on dialysis, Rob was listed for a kidney transplant. We were hopeful and optimistic. Rob was young, and we knew a transplant could return him to a normal life again. But we couldn't imagine how hard the wait would be. Rob increased his dialysis to 3 times a week. He was exhausted. He began to prefer to stay home because he was too tired to participate in family activities or go on vacations. I knew dialysis was taking its toll on him. He certainly didn't like the way it made him feel, and he became a more passive father to our daughter. Soon, 3 days a week on dialysis wasn't enough, and Rob had to sometimes go to 2 days in a row. Rob worked at the Ohio Department of Job and Family Services for 9 years. This was a job that he grew to love because he helped people. Although he wasn't a caseworker, he was always involved in helping someone get assistance with an issue. He took great pride in being a problem solver. In August 2009, Rob's condition no longer allowed him to work, and he went on disability. His health worsened, and in February 2011, Rob died waiting for his transplant. The gift my 39-year-old husband so desperately needed did not come in time. I share this story today because I'm sure many of you have heard of the transplant waiting list. But because the statistics are so global, so large, we often think of them in a global way. I'm here to remind you that if one more person might have said yes to donation, Rob could be here today speaking as a recipient. My hope is that by my sharing my story, I can prevent another family from experiencing the same pain and loss. There was so much more that Rob wanted to do in life, and I know the same is true for the more than 123,000 people waiting for transplants. In closing, I'd like to extend my gratitude to the council for highlighting such an important and life-saving initiative by encouraging the citizens of Columbus to register as donors. You are giving hope to those waiting on their gift of life, as well as those who love them. Thank you.
Off of a great Earth Day and week in Columbus is the announcement of a new urban garden in the Hilltop neighborhood. Environment Committee Chair Michelle Mills sponsored legislation to partner with Urban Farms of Central Ohio, LLC, as a subsidiary of the Mid-Ohio Food Bank, who are leasing 5 acres of vacant land on the hilltop for the city's land bank to create a second urban farm. Their first urban farm is located in Marion Franklin. The group will transform the hilltop site into a productive farm that will provide low-income residents access to fresh, local produce. The farm will be located on North Wheatland Avenue off of West Broad Street. They expect to begin preparing the land this spring and begin the farming activities later this summer. From the food bank is Matt Habash, followed by County Treasurer Ed Leonard.
To President Ginther, to President Pro Tem Mills, and to all the other council members, I truly wanted to simply say this is an expansion of a project we started a few years ago. We've had this amazing success at Clearfield Elementary School, where we took a 5-acre site and really began with the idea that could we actually start urban farming in Central Ohio. It's good to do it on a larger scale. There's a phenomenal community garden program in this community, and this was a case, could we scale that up even more? I was asked by some donors to do that. We stepped up to, in partnership with Church for All People on the south side, and with our county treasurer, Ed Leonard, and the county land bank, really trying to pull together a strategy with the idea that can we make this sustainable? So it's one thing to do this, and the food bank's willing to backbone this in the initial, you know, but the idea is, can we actually make this so that, you know, it is profit-making, generating, going back into the programs? And one of the goals as we go forward is really to turn this into an education program for young people, you know, and to create jobs, so we did. And the amazing partnership that happened at Clearfield was the Marion Franklin community. Exceeded all of our expectations, had a long partnership with them back from the days when we combined and built that rec center there many, many years ago. But they stepped up, the football team at the high school, everybody came together. It is their farm. I mean, I think that's the way we look at it. They really have, you know, stepped up. They grow the, you know, help us grow the food. They weed, they do all the work. They man the pay if you can market that's there. They've, you know, generated some money out of the market there, so it's not all just a giveaway in terms of free food. People are being able to afford and pay if you can. So that was the first step in us in terms of trying to create that market. Well, now we have the opportunity to go up to the hilltop. And, you know, that market grew 20,000 pounds, or that farm grew 20,000 pounds last year, and we're going to try to double that this year. We put up high tunnels at Clearfield, stepping up into a piece of property that I had the opportunity many, many, many years ago to try to figure out what to do with, you know, when we couldn't get development on there. So we're going to repurpose that while we continue to look for stronger uses of that property. And hopefully we can build the same level of partnership with the Hilltop community and continue to grow food there as well, have the community engaged in the process. We sell to local restaurants from there, and we will use some of this food that's grown to put into the Reeb School market that we're going to create inside of Reeb School and the Pay If You Can restaurant that's also going into Reeb. So it's this wonderful partnership that we've had with many players, and I really want to thank the Columbus Land Bank as well for willing to help step up and help us figure out how to do that as well. So to all of you, this has been what, you know, for us, it's a, you know, labor of love in terms of really, you know, answering a question of how does this community feed itself? And that's what we're all trying to do with all the efforts. You heard many pieces of legislation tonight that were directly related to continuing to address the issue of food in this community. So I thank you for the opportunity.
I really can't add a whole lot more than what Matt has added to this. I mean, because from the county's land bank perspective, when we started attacking the issue of vacant properties, we recognized that not every property was going to be developed into a new home or rehab, and that there were going to be certain vacant properties that were, this was going to be the outcome. This might be a very good use utilization of the property until it was ready to be developed. And so taking advantage of Clearfield Elementary opportunity, we've been very successful there. Again, over 20,000 pounds of food last year. Our hope is to get 40,000 pounds of food. And again, available throughout the community. It'll be available, you know, working with local restaurants and working with local groups to get that produce out and available in the community. Because our mission is growing a healthier community from the ground up. So, and that's really what we want to do. And so with your support, we're going to be able to do that.
One last thing I forgot to mention is just a very unique feature of this. Sarah Lanky's here is our program director, hiding back in the back. She wouldn't come up here. But we also, our farmers are all women. Every one of our farm, the two farmers that run the program are female, and the new person we just hired as well as our is also female. So we have an entire female staff running this farm, which I think is pretty cool.
Thank you, Matt. I appreciate it. And thank you, Treasurer Leonard. I really appreciate the comments. And this is just the beginning as we talk about vacant land and property and what is the next step and how do we utilize that. And again, to your point, it's not all going to turn into another residential area. We have to figure out what's the best use of some of the land. And that's a challenge as we go forward and as urban farming grows and as it continues to demonstrate its ability to help us address food insecurity as well, we have to figure out the best way to embrace these type of opportunities. So I thank you very much for coming down, and I appreciate it.
City Council is continuing its support of a small business training program that allows local companies access to the city's in-house training services. Here's Councilmember Tyson.
And this legislation is co-sponsored by Councilmember Hardin, and it is the 2015 Small Business Training Program. It's to authorize the appropriation expenditure of $25,000 for the Jobs Growth Fund for the Small Business Training Services Program, and to authorize and direct the Director of the Department of Human Resources to implement the Small Business Training Services Program and to declare an emergency. The Small Business Training Services Program allow local companies with a contract compliance number with the City of Columbus free access to Columbus citywide training and development and numerous classes that they offer to improve the professional skills of their workers. The idea for this pilot came from the series of small business roundtable discussions that city council members held with representatives of the Columbus business community. And thus now we have these training classes. So if you are an employer and you are registered with the City of Columbus and you are an employer with 50 or fewer employees, you can take advantage of classes with the City of Columbus. At this point, 54 businesses have taken advantage of these programs. It is a great way to train your employees, but it's also a great way to retain your employees. And so we want all small businesses to have the opportunity to grow and to thrive, and by providing those classes, it allows their employees to be able to do that. Councilmember Hardin, do you make any comments?
Thank you, Chair Tyson. Chair of the Small and Minority Business Committee, I am excited to co-sponsor this piece of legislation with you and encourage all small business owners to take advantage of these opportunities to come in and use these training programs and sessions. They are helpful, and again, this idea came from meeting with small business owners. This is just another example of us trying to be responsive to a good idea and working to make sure that Columbus is the best place to start and run a small business. So thank you.
Councilmember Paley.
I just want to thank Director Brandon and the Department of Human Resources as Chair of Human Resources. They have really gone out of their way to facilitate the community with no extra employees they may add to provide and open up these opportunities to the community. So thank you, Director Brandon, for all your hard work.
Thank you, Councilmember Paley. Yes, thank you, Director Brandon. A special thank you to Chris Cannon Jackson for the work that she is doing to make sure that these businesses can grow and thrive under her leadership and training.
Council President Ginther has recognized a longtime human services advocate for her help with homeless youth in Columbus. Dr. Natasha Slesnick runs Star House, a safe haven for teens and young adults looking to move past homelessness and into stable housing situations. Here's Council President Ginther.
During their stay, young people can get something to eat, do laundry, and take advantage of educational and job training opportunities. Star House provides a critical service in our community. I had the opportunity to tour the Star House late last year and has outgrown its current facility. So our Columbus City Council passed legislation to help Star House find a new location to provide its 24-hour drop-in services to homeless teens and young adults. Dr. Slesnick, thank you for all of your hard work and dedication towards combating youth homelessness and advocating on behalf of our most vulnerable young residents. Dr. Slesnick, it is an honor to have you here tonight and to recognize you for all of your great contributions to improving the lives of young people in our community. So with that, I'll allow you to make a few comments.
President Ginther, council members, and Mayor Coleman, I'm honored to be recognized for my efforts to end homelessness among our youth in Columbus. Many people in Columbus over the years have become aware of homelessness amongst our young people, and several have become passionate advocates for ending homelessness amongst these youth. I'm thinking of the Star House board members, including Terry O'Connell, Matt Habash, Melinda Swan, Ginny Barney, Neil Clark, Ed Sargas, James Alexander, and Cheryl Ochterberg. Some people say that homelessness will never end, but I don't believe that. I can't believe that. When I see a tentative youth entering the Star House for the first time, hungry, nervous, tired, scared, I get a visceral response, and this visceral response hasn't abated in nearly 20 years. I won't rest until every homeless youth in this city has a home, a way to sustain themselves, and are able to say that they know what it is to be happy. I hope that each youth that's experiencing homelessness will think that even though they feel completely alone and have nowhere to turn, that their community has stepped up, because their community has collectively agreed that no one should go hungry and no one should be without a home. It can be done, and it will be done. Thank you again.
Dr. Sleznik, could you introduce the folks that are with you tonight?
This is Amir Denning, and he nominated me. And this is my husband, and he's my better half. Rick Gozier.
Councilmember Paley.
I want to thank you for what you do and what Star House does. In 27 years in the juvenile court, I've seen many kids that age out of foster care without the ability to support themselves. And there has not been this place to protect these young people in such a long time, and it's so very important that we acknowledge this problem and do something about it. So thank you so much for everything that you've done.
Thank you.
The other Councilmember Tyson.
Yes, thank you, President Genther, for presenting this resolution. I want to say thank you so much for the work that you do in our community each day. We know that if these young people don't get the housing and supportive services, they'll become homeless adults. And that's, we certainly know that we're having a challenge with that already within our community. We're working on that. But if we can find a way, as you're doing, to provide them with the housing and the supportive services to move forward in their lives, they will become wonderful adults. So thank you for the work that you're doing to help our young people.
We are out of time for this edition of Call the Roll. If you have a question or a comment, please email us at callthroll@columbus.gov. That's callthroll at columbus.gov. Don't forget, you follow the Columbus City Council on our Facebook and our Twitter pages. On behalf of the entire Columbus City Council, I'm your host, John Ivanek. Thanks for listening to Freedom FM, and have a great weekend.